Ladies and gentlemen, Shavua Tov, and a happy post-Hanukkah. Today, I decided to talk about something which is not controversial in the political sense. Purely a straight halachic topic, which is what I was asked to do originally. If you remember when this whole series began, I was asked to speak about modernity in terms of straightforward halachic topics. So tonight I decided to talk about the modern kitchen, which is a constantly evolving phenomenon. It keeps changing. And there are many, many questions that come up. We can't discuss all of them in one session, but we'll make a beginning. Now, you say the modern kitchen. How do you define a modern kitchen? What does a modern kitchen mean? I'll give it a definition. That the modern kitchen has things in it that, just to make it generally speaking, we'll say that 50 years ago didn't exist. It existed, it was not well known, not commonly in kitchens. And today, it becomes more and more common in kitchens. I'd like you to come up with a list. We have some men and women here, of things that you can think of that 50 years ago didn't exist and now it exists. The first is a microwave. Good. What else?
Dishwasher.
What else?
Mixed masters.
I think mixed masters were here a long time ago.
Self-cleaning
oven may not have been here. What else? Crock pots were not here 50 years ago.
Electronic ignition instead of the gas.
That's correct. And the more recent phenomena, such as warming drawers, things which didn't exist until much more recently. We have an expert in kitchens. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah.
So you know,
50 years ago, there were no.
None of these things existed. So we have about ten. We rattled off approximately 10. Phenomena which relate to what we call the modern kitchen, and Mr. Shabbos being an expert will probably think of a few more as the shiur progresses. And what does halacha have to say about all these things? And all these things relate to halacha questions, primarily in Hilchos Shabbos, but in Hilchos Kashrus as well, and in the laws of Bishul Aklam as well. So all these things have tremendous ramifications. Tremendous. Let's start with the microwave. The microwave is something which, I don't know the science of it exactly, but when I was growing up, it certainly did not exist. I don't know exactly when it became popular. My thinking is about 25 years ago, approximately, is when it became popular. It existed before that. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about it, a very important tshuva, which we'll discuss. And Rav Moshe's tshuva is being told by the experts that the microwave is the wave of the future. And in a while, everyone's been using microwaves to cook routinely, and it's going to become the number one way to cook. Never came true. But Rav Moshe Paskin and Shaila based on that assumption that it's going to happen. Here's a big question. A microwave, there's no fire. That's clear. Whatever the science, there's no fire in a microwave. And this is a very serious question. What is the halachic status as far as Shabbos is concerned? For the following reason. The Gemara tells in Masech to Shabbos, someone's mevashel b'chama. If someone cooks in the sun, he is not culpable. Potter. The chama is even mutter. What we call betoldos chama, a derivation of the sun, is potter. And the question becomes, if one cooks in a microwave, what is the halachic status? And on many different levels. One is, if someone has to cook for a chole sheyesh bo sakon. Someone's life is in danger if you don't give cooking something hot. So you have two... No, so you're right. So you have two options in front of you. You have your regular... You can turn on an oven to light a regular fire, mavir esh, right? And that'll be number two. And even if you have the esh from beforehand, you'll put a pot of water to cook the tea. So you're cooking up water, which is, again, a real honest-to-goodness Torah prohibition because it's on a regular fire. Your alternative is to have a cup of water, put it into the microwave, and put it in the microwave, and done.
What's the electricity issue?
Oh, so there are electricity issues in microwaves. I guess that's a topic for a whole different shiur. I didn't plan to talk about it at length today. But according to many authorities, just the mere formation of an electrical circuit is not a Torah prohibition. It's a rabbinic prohibition. We're not exactly sure the nature of the rabbinical prohibition, but we assume take it as a rabbinical prohibition according to most authorities. It can't come close to the Torah prohibition of cooking up water on a regular fire, which would be Bishul, a real Torah prohibition, as opposed to cooking up the water in the microwave, which, since the microwave has no fire, should be compared to cooking on in the sun or something which is from the sun. Microwaves are from somehow related. They have in common with the sun. There's no real fire in front of us. That's the question. So there's a Rashi. That's where all the problems start. Rashi says in Masechta Shabbos, Aflama Tesem and Aleph, where this is found, that the reason why someone who cooks in the sun is not considered to be guilty of the Chilul Shabbos is because Ein Derech, Ein Darko Bekach. It's not the normal way. Oh, comes from Moshe Feinstein and says, in Igros Moshe, written many years ago, in the prediction that the microwave is going to be the wave of the future, you know, it's going to be when everyone's going to start cooking water in microwaves, that's going to be Darko Bekach, Torah prohibitions.
It's definitely Darko Bekach.
Right, even today.
Any office, and that's what they're eating up their coffee.
Right, right. It certainly is dark of a cup. You know, it hasn't taken over all the kitchens, but in people where they don't have a full blown kitchen, they want to have a hot cup of tea, they'll likely put it in a microwave. Whereas 50 years ago, they had these little immersion coils, which are other kind of tricks that they had to make their coffees and teas. Whatever. No, but that is electric. So that coils like a fire. You may not see a fire, but that would be a derice, I think. But the microwave, there's nothing hot, there's no fire, it's just waves. Oh. So there's a problem. The problem is against the Gemara. What's the Gemara? The Gemara in the very same daf, Shabbat Aflama Tesem and Av, tells us there's a big dispute about someone who cooks with what's called water from Tveria. Chamei Tveria. Now, Tveria, you know, it's hot springs. It doesn't have to be Tveria. It could be hot springs, Georgia. It could be the same concept of hot springs. If you cook with the water from the hot spring, is that a Torah violation or a rabbinic violation? Says the Gemara, it depends what is the source of the heat of that water. And it seems to be a matter of dispute. According to some, it's considered the same as Chama. It's coming from the sun, somehow or other. And according to a different interpretation, catch this now, I don't want to scare anybody, the reason why the hot springs are hot is because it's cholfa apischa de Gehenna. It passes through the opening to Gehenna. That's quite a statement. What does it mean? So I was told that some of the Rabbanim of today said it means geothermic heat, which means heat from the core of the earth, which is considered to be a fire. Of course, the sun is also a fire. Yeah, but the sun is 92 million miles away. So that's considered a separate entity. Apparently, the heat which comes from the core of the earth is not that far away. So it would be considered to be a fire on this earth, as opposed to the sun, which is a different celestial being, and would not count as a fire that we have here in our kitchens. Okay, here's a question. If Rav Moshe is right, make up your mind. Either it's normal, or it's not normal. If it's normal, then there should be a Torah violation, irrespective of the source of heat. And if it's not normal, then what? There should be no Torah violation, because it's called Shelo Kedarko, even if, again, irrespective of the source of heat. Doesn't the Gemara, which is concerned whether the source of heat is the sun or the earth, the geothermic, the core of the earth, that's the way long pshat, shouldn't that prove there's a fundamental distinction between a source of heat which comes from a fire and from a non-fire? And it's nothing to do with what the normal way of cooking is. That's the question which Rav Moshe is bothered with. He asked the question himself. Rav Moshe knows Shas, you understand? The same page that he quotes the Rashi from, the same exact page, is where this Gemara is found. It's Shabbos Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, 39a. That's the source. That's the question. So Rav Moshe says something, I'm not exactly sure what he's really driving at, but one can make the following suggestion, like this. When something is not a normal activity, this in itself does not make it permissible on Shabbos. It may remove the Torah prohibition, which we call a kila achayar, or b'shinui, shalo kederech. That makes it into a din derabbanan, but it doesn't make it permissible. To be permissible, it has to be something of a totally different order. And let me explain to you. If someone cooks in the sun, the reason why it's permissible, not merely a rabbinic prohibition, not a Torah prohibition, why is it actually permissible? I believe it's because of a combination of factors. One, people don't normally cook that way in the sun. And two, most foods cannot be cooked in the sun. You try to make a cholent in the sun, it's not going to go. So here the rabbis came along with a fascinating concept, and they said, look, since most things can't be cooked in this fashion, we are going to say that it is not only not a Torah violation, because people don't normally cook this way, but we're even going to go as far as to say that it's permissible. This is perhaps what Rashi is saying. It's not just that it's no Torah violation, but since most things can't cook there, and people don't normally cook there, so we're going to say it's not a violation at all. However, had it been a potential Torah violation, then the mere fact that people are not cooking in it may not have yielded the same result. But of course, you'll ask me an obvious question. Show me in the Torah where it says that cooking is only with a fire. You have to have a source for it. In other words, if you're going to say it depends on subjectively what's going on, which is the way some of them try to rush in there, so you don't need any sources. But if we're going to suggest an objective requirement for fire, you have to have a source. You have to have a source. Without a source, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman in his tshuva tries to demonstrate that there's no din of cooking with no fire from various other areas of halacha. It's not limited to Shabbos. Had it been a pure shaloka derech, we'd be limited to Shabbos. Rabbi Moshe quotes a Gemara in Masechta Pesachim, a couple of Gemaras in Pesachim that say that if it's only cooked in the sun, you're not chayiv in challah. Things of this nature. You can't be yotzei matzah on Pesach. Things of this nature. So you see, it's nothing to do with dark or not dark, but presumably, you see, it's an internal and intrinsic requirement for actual fire. Shlomo Zalman's proofs can be refuted somewhat. Maybe it's only a special din as far as afia is concerned, to be considered lechem, because for challah requires bacholchem lechem aretz and matzah to be lechem oni. So we can say that in order to be considered a proper fire, a tanur, you needed to. Offul betaner, a pasuk in the Tochacha, offul lachmachem betaner. A tana is only if it's fueled by a fire. But if it's not a requirement for actual lechem, then perhaps we don't find there a requirement for fire at all. So here's my answer where the requirement for fire comes from. It comes from a pasuk. There is one pasuk. I'm sorry? Oh, that's exactly the pasuk. The pasuk says as follows: Al tochu mimenu no, uvashel bevushel b'mayim. You're not permitted to eat the korban pesach if it is cooked in water. Ki im tzli esh. It's only permissible to eat the korban pesach if it is in fact roasted in a fire. I would like to derive from this, not only is the roasting process a fire, but even the cooking process is a fire. I'm explaining to you. Al tochu mimenu no, uvashel bemushel b'mayim, ki im tzli esh. And the esh is modifying the entire sentence. Not only is the esh the source of tzli, but the esh is the source of the bashal mavushal b'mayim. That's all one big continuum. That's the best I can do as far as that's the only place I know in the whole Torah where the word esh is used in the context of preparing foods and cooking is that one pasuk. I mean, that pasuk, fortunately for my purpose, has the word mavushal in it as well. So there's a juxtaposition of the word esh and the word mavushal. True, it's indirect, not the fire, you're only cooking in water, but since it is the two are found within a few words of each other, I'm saying pshat, that bashal bevushal b'mayim means the bashal bevushal mayim, which is esh, as opposed to tzli, which is direct esh. That's my source. I don't have a better source, but I think it's a pretty good source to demonstrate this yourself. Therefore, coming to the bottom line, in my view, if someone cooks in a microwave, it would not be a Torah violation on Shabbos. No esh. No esh is not considered to be bishul. That's what I think. And therefore, in this unusual situation, which a person would have to cook for someone who's gravely ill and needs some hot food, and if you have a microwave and a regular oven, not only would I say to use a microwave as opposed to putting on the fire and cooking the water, even if your fire is on already, I would still tell you it's better to use the microwave. That's number one. But I'm not finished yet with microwaves and Shabbos. Listen carefully. people do sometimes cook in microwaves. I would like to know from the sample here, what does anybody in this room cook, not reheat, cook in a microwave?
Potatoes.
Potatoes?
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Six minutes, you get a good potato.
Good. So let's imagine that...
breakfast. Oats.
Oats, okay. But oh, that's, I like potatoes as a better example.
Vegetables.
Potatoes. So we have potatoes. It could be potato kugel for that matter. Potatoes, potato kugel. You make it in a microwave. Not kugel? Won't go. Okay, so potatoes. Okay. Potatoes? Fine. So on Friday afternoon, time is a little late, 6 minutes they cook potatoes and they put them away and they eat them. Half the potatoes they eat Friday night. It's a very healthy side dish, potatoes. They put the other half in the refrigerator and they plan to use the other half of the potatoes on Shabbos for the Suda Shabbos. Fine. So there's a way in which they can heat it up on Shabbos. That's how they use a non-adjustable hot tray. Another fairly recent device. And let's assume for the moment, from the perspective of Shabbos, as long as something is fully cooked, there's nothing wrong with putting it on a non-adjustable hot tray, which happens to be my opinion, it would be okay, even from a fridge. Not liquid. Right, not liquid, only solids. But now I have a big problem. If I'm right that when you cook the potato the first time with a microwave, that is not halachic cooking, I have a problem. Generally speaking, why is it permissible to put a piece of chicken on this ein bishul achar bishul? It was already cooked on Friday, and you can't cook it a second time on Shabbos. In this case, not so simple. The Prima Gadim is worried about this question. Someone cooked in the sun. He didn't have microwaves in Prima Gadim. He had sun. If you cook something in the sun and you reheat it on Shabbos, perhaps you're in a violation of the Torah prohibition of bishul, because there never was a first cooking process. He's not sure. I'm not sure either, of course, but I'm afraid. So if you cook something in a microwave, in my opinion, you cannot reheat it on Shabbos. I'm going to give you a chumrah. So it goes both ways. I gave you a leniency, which doesn't help you too much. I guess unless someone's very sick, that if you cook in a microwave, it's not considered to be a Torah violation. But by the same token, I'm giving you a chumrah that if you cooked it on Friday in a microwave, you should not reheat it on Shabbos, because maybe it's as to paraphrase the Prima Gadim, there's yesh bishul, acha bishul b'cham. Yes?
But what happens, most microwaves have a light inside, and you open up the door, you put on the light.
That's a good question. That is a very good question. It's a good question. It's a problem. It's a very serious problem. Hold on, one second. Not on Shabbos anyway. So
before Shabbos.
You can't think you can turn the light.
Okay. Now I do not know, maybe Mr. Shabbos knows, what kind of light is typically found in a microwave.
That's I think incandescent.
Incandescent, really?
Yeah, a regular light.
Incandescent bulb.
Because the controls to set the controls, that's LED. So that's not incandescent light.
But the light in is incandescent as far as you know? So that's gonna be a problem. And of course, the problem is, although that's not your intention, you don't really want them. You don't need a light. But there's a question we call it. What do we call it? A psik resha, which means that if you open the microwave, it's inevitable that the light is going to go on.
It goes on at the moment. It's not
right away.
It's not immediate.
At that second, you open the door, the light goes on. So we have to figure out to ourselves: does every single microwave have a light?
Yes.
Did the bulb ever go out?
Then you throw out the microwave.
Bulbs go out. So they should be replaceable. Right. Access to
I'm sorry?
Like in your refrigerator.
I know.
My bulb in your refrigerator.
Take it out.
And what happened then?
It still works. The microwave works, but the light is out.
So now I have to ask an honest question. The fact that the manufacturers put in a light, it must be something which they have to do, or people want it.
People want it.
You
want to see
what you're doing.
Okay, so if you want, then you have a big problem with this psik resha, because it's not what we call in our language a psik resha, the lo nichle, that you don't care about. But it's a psik resha, what? The nichle, that you do want.
Me personally, I don't care.
You don't care, but no.
You can't turn it off.
No, I understand that. I don't care turning it off. The question is, do we really. Is it. I'm trying to say it in the most honest possible way.
He had a microwave where the light went off and we continued using it.
I understand that. He didn't even bother replacing the bulb.
No. Didn't even try.
Didn't even try.
I don't think you can.
I don't think so either.
Take the whole machine apart.
Uh-huh. But here's a big... No, I'm asking the question. If I cannot reduce the bulb to a psikresh of the lo nichale, then I have not gained too much by telling you to use the regular, to use a microwave, because although you have avoided the Torah prohibition of cooking water, you ran into a Torah prohibition of putting on a light bulb to a psikresh. Now, there are some poskim, we spoke in the Ksubas here, that say that psikresha on Shabbos is midirabbana. But that's a very minority view. And there are poskim who for some reason say that the incandescent bulb is not an Easter of Havara, but that's also a very, very minority view. What I would say, therefore, is as follows. Assuming a microwave has a light, I make the following compromise. If you have an existing fire, so now you can pick your poison. Because if you have an existing fire, if you cook the water, there's a Torah prohibition of bishul, not havara, because the fire is on already. If you use a microwave, you can have a Torah prohibition in all likelihood of havara on the incandescent bulb, even though it's a psikoresha, but it's probably nichale, and not bishul. So pick your poison. The only way I would tell you to use a microwave in that case, since there's a bulb there, is in case you have no fire. So now you have a choice of doing two doraisas, putting on a bulb and cooking, putting on the gas and cooking the fire on top of it, which would be a double deraisa, versus the microwave, which even though the incandescent bulb is going to go on, which is likely a deraisa, psikresha de nichale, well, there are a couple of question marks, but you want to have the additional bishul, if I'm right. So
would that change if you had to do, if you knew that you're going to have to use the microwave multiple times?
That's a good question. Because when it comes to a regular oven, you put the fire on once, and that's it. Leave it on for the rest of Shabbos. But here, if you're a microwave, you have to keep opening and closing. There's no alternative. Yes, it would make a difference. And I would say forget about it. Just use the regular one.
And also, once you've taken the food out, you've got to leave your door open, really. Because when you close it, you turn the light off again.
Okay.
I'm just saying, you have to be careful. According to the Chazon Ish, the aspect of light is the bona aspect. That would be true over here as well.
Exactly. According to Chazon Ish,
that's
correct. Okay. But most persons seem to disagree. This is microwaves as far as Shabbos is concerned. Oh, what about as far as kashrus is concerned? So here a microwave in as compared to the old traditional oven is both better and worse. Both better and worse. And I'll explain as follows. In one way it's better, for the same reason we mentioned before, that the regular oven has a fire and the microwave has no fire. And therefore there are many poskim who suggest that a microwave, if you cook basa b'chalav, let's take the worst case scenario. It needs to lose a vash l'gadiyah b'chalav imo. You take a cup of milk, you put in a piece of meat, and you cook it up. So if you cook it up in the microwave, in my view, you would not be in violation of lose a vash l'gadiyah b'chalav imo. There's no bishul, I said before, there's no esh. If you did it in your regular fire, I'm not saying you can eat it.
I want to make sure that nobody walks out of here.
So you would not be in violation of Savash. Of course you can't eat it, because for many reasons. But the question would be, we're not discussing the issue of cooking it on purpose of the meat in a cup of milk. We want to know, can you have one microwave for both fleishiks and milchiks? Let's talk about that. As opposed to a regular oven. So of course, in a regular oven, the ovens that we have, I wouldn't call this engaging modernity. I think these regular ovens that we have today have been around for as long as I can remember, these kind of ovens, so they have to be X number of years old. And they probably had it probably even 50 years before that also. They've probably been around for 100 years, these kinds of ovens that we have, more or less, similar kind of ovens. So in those kinds of ovens, there's a big dispute as to whether you require, what's the status of fleishiks and milchiks in these ovens. There are three opinions. Some are very, very strict and say that there's no way to have any fleishiks and milchiks in the same oven ever. Forget about it.
Yeah. One after the other.
Even one after the other. Can't. You can't have to have a dedicated fleishik oven. If you want to have for the other kind, you have to wrap it. another double wrap it, triple wrap it. Everyone has different times of wrapping. So if you wrap it, then it's in a separate container. It's not really in the oven. It's in a separate place. Other than that, forget about it. That's the most strict position. The most lenient position is, no, you can have one oven for fleishiks and one oven, same oven for fleishiks, same oven for milchiks. It's not a problem. Why is not a problem? It says in Shulchan Aruch, if you have a pot full of milk on a fire, and the steam, the heavy steam is coming out and bumps into the fleishik pot directly on top of it, so the fleishik pot is now treif, because the fleishik pot with the absorption of milchiks. That we know is true. It's a din of Shulchan Aruch. No one's denying. That's based upon a Mishnah of all places, Masechta Machshirin. Whoever learns Machshirin. Machshirin is talking about a merchatz. A merchatz is a bathhouse. In the old days, the bathhouse was very, very intense steam. Maybe some of you some of the history of these baths. Like a schwitz. We call it a hevel. It's a piping steam. So these gedolim say that our ovens don't have that. You don't find this kind of a piping, the steam that you really see, heavy steam in our ovens. You see it, you'll see it. You have a pot full and you go pick up your pot. A whole bunch of steam comes out. So if that would be a milchik pot, and you had right on top of it a piece of a fleishik pot cover, that would become treif, because there's so much hevel, thick steam. Our ovens don't have that. I've never seen that in an oven. And therefore they say, it's no problem. You can use it for fleishik now. Wait till it cools down and wait till all the smell of the flesh it leaves, because otherwise it's a question of reichel lechatchila. And then 3 hours later, you made lunch, you had milchik soup, no problem. And supper, you have fleshik soup, whatever, no problem. As long as you wait a number of hours in between till it cools down, it can be done. That's the most lenient opinion. They have the two extreme opinions. Rav Moshe has the middle opinion. In Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe says, it all depends, is it liquid or is it solid? Because he is worried not only about what we call Hevel, 16, he's even worried about what he calls Zeya. Zeya means steam which is not so thick, but it's, any liquid will produce a certain amount of Zeya. Certain amount. Solids, generally speaking, do not produce Zeya. That's what it says in all the poskims. As a general rule, liquids which are heated up, there's a certain amount of, this you see, I'm not telling you, those know better than me. Liquids produce a certain amount of steam, not thick steam like Hevel, but there's a certain amount which will cause Zeya, which they do have. Whereas if it's a solid, generally speaking, we'll not have this kind of a Zeya. Says Rav Moshe. So we have to assume that every liquid produces Zeya. So therefore, it's prohibited to use exactly the same oven for fleishiks for lunchtime and milchiks for supper time, if you're using liquid for both, because the steam will come up. And it's going to make the absorption of the fleishiks and the absorption of the milchiks. That's going to be a problem. Rav Moshe also assumes that the absorption will come down in that same Zeya. What goes up must come down. If it doesn't come down, I don't care what goes up on top. As long as it doesn't come down, we're not eating the oven. We're eating the food. This is Rav Moshe's psak. Okay? We'll call the centrist psak. So therefore, what it comes out, emerges, halacha l'maisa, is that if you want it, we should dedicate our ovens to be one kind. In most homes, I think it's fleishik. I think so. The oven is fleishik. It's assumed to be fleishik. So you can do fleishik without any restrictions. If you want to cook milk, you can do it in one of two conditions. Either it's dry. What does dry mean? It doesn't pour like water. It pours like, there's a little physics. If it pours like water, by definition, it produces zeya. If it's anything less than that, even though you can pour like, a cake batter. You can pour a cake batter, but the experts can tell me, is it steam from a cake batter? I never saw steam from a cake batter. I mean, of course, scientifically, there's steam from everything. A piece of potato produces steam. I'm talking about enough steam that it's noticeable, significant. I don't think, again, from little life experience, Rav Moshe tells me, if it pours like water, it's liquid, it's what's called Zeyas Mashkim. Zeyas Ochlim, we assume, unless we start reading, otherwise, that there's no Zeyah to speak of. That's his psak. So you have two choices. Either you use the milchik only for solids, or if it's liquid, you have to cover it. That's what happens in my house. Our oven is officially fleishik. If you want a milchik, if it's liquid, which almost never happens, I can't even remember, maybe it happened once in all the years. I watched some kind of a liquid.
Most people deal with fleishik and powder. Okay, well. You bake challahs and have roast your meat.
Okay, so not in the same oven at the same time. That would not be appropriate. If you cooked supper, at 5 o'clock on Thursday, and there you had, and there was some meat right? And you wait till 10 o'clock at night when it's totally cooled down, there's no more smell, there's no more anything, and you put your challahs at 10 o'clock at night into the oven, and according to my understanding, those challahs are parv, because there's no way for the whatever was absorbed in this walls or ceiling to get down into the challah, because it's, there's no steam from the challah. There's no way to conduct it. Now, something may drip in. Look, if you see something dripping, you're not going to be happy. You're going to pull it. You won't be happy as the baker with something which drips. You don't see. Those who baked challahs in ovens, have you ever seen drips of from the ceiling come into it?
No.
So even though it may happen, it's probably bottled, it's not visible. Okay. This is all introduction. This is regular ovens. Now, microwaves. Are they better or are they worse? So from one perspective, they're better. Because there's no fire. There's no fire. So there are those who argue that there can be no absorption. There's no fire. No fire, that's all. There's just no fire. And although we do know about utensils which were never on the fire, what do we have a name for those utensils? A utensil which has food which is never on the fire, what do we call that? If it was on the fire, is or was, we call it a kli rishon. If it was never on the fire, we call it a kli sheni. Kli sheni doesn't cook. Kli sheni, there's no blia according to the way we pass, like the Ramah. So that's it. Done. Some say. There's an additional reason to be more lenient when it comes to microwave. And that's as follows. In order for there to be absorption, we require something which is called yad soledes bo, which means that it has to be too hot to touch. How hot is that? Well, I mean, simple. Just put your hand there and see if it's too hot to touch. So the poskim say that's not enough of a proof. If you can touch it for a second, that doesn't mean too much. You have to be able to keep your hand in there for a minute. If you keep it there for a minute, then it's not a problem. Okay. So I'll ask everybody in the room to come back next Motzei Shabbos with a report. You cook something in a microwave. You opened it up. You immediately put your hand on the ceiling and see if you can leave it there for a minute. I tried it, and I left it there for a minute with no problem. No problem. Even the ceiling, which gets the ceiling is the hottest, because heat rises. The plate, you could drop it, it's not so hot it gets. But that's getting hot from the food, not as opposed to the ceiling.
Oh. You've covered yourself, is that correct?
Even without covering.
If it's uncovered?
I don't think, you'll do an experiment. Cook a cup of tea. You tell me you cook tea in the microwave, that's what you told me. Tea or coffee, cook a cup of tea in the microwave, and as soon as you pull it out, quickly, before you even take the tea out, put your hands on the roof and see what happens. I asked my Talmidim what they thought the Shir of Yad Soledes Bo was, because there's a big fight among the Gedolei HaPoskim as to what it is. Some say it's as low as 104 degrees, and some say it's much, we're not sure, maybe it's even as high as Moshe's 160, maybe even 175, like a tremendously high numbers. Right. Right. It's very, very hot. Right. Much, very, very hot. So I asked my boys to find out how hot. Oh, here's the problem. So the Rashba says that a person does not eat Yad Soledes Bo food and does not bathe in Yad Soledes Bo water. So it should be an easy way to find out what's going on. The problem is, people will sip tea at extraordinarily hot temperatures. People like the hot tea. It could be up there 170 degrees. And they take it straight from the urine. They blow, and they sip. So I asked my Tamilim, what is blowing accomplished? They went on the internet. My shit, everyone has internet.
Who's it off?
How does it work? You know how it works? They told me how it works on the internet. I don't know if it's true. When you blow, so you're blowing the steam on top away. And that enables the heat to rise. The steam keeps it in. Kach shamati. The boys, I've asked a question, they come, Rebbe, and 2 minutes later, they're on the computers, the boys.
In class.
Right. Half my boys are on computers, and hopefully they're taking notes in the shir. When I ask them to find out facts, in 2 minutes, they have it up for me. Anything. So I said, well, how hot is the water for a bath or a shower? So one of the boys has a hot tub that his family uses, and I asked him to find out for me in the hot tub, how hot is the tub. So believe it or not, the average person's tub is only 102 degrees. I was shocked. And above 111, they don't set it. It's too hot. I was shocked that it's such a low number. So I sent my boys to the lab in NYU. I said, do me a favor. See how hot you can put your hand into the water and leave it there for a minute. Slowly? And I said like this to them. Rav Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva. It's printed in the Shemir Shabbos Kol Chasa. He said like this. It says in the Gemara that chom beis hashchita, that is the heat of the place where we slaughter, is not considered to be halachically hot. So it's obviously less than yatzal lettuce though. Good. So Rav Shlomo Zalman is a smart man. He said, what of all the things that we sheft, what's the hottest? A duck. Goose. That was one of those. And they measured it at being what he calls 45 degrees. Now 104 is what we call 40 degrees. And 45 is 113. It's 1 centigrade. So Rav Shlomo Zalman paskin, till 113, he helped us with 9 degrees. Till then, it used to be Machon Yerushalayim for 104. Shlomo Zalman came along. No, till 113, you're covered. It's unbelievable how smart Shlomo Zalman was. I sent my boys to the lab, and the lab is centigrade.
Had any ducks there?
No ducks, but they had two boys went to the lab and see how, and two separate boys, and they were able to keep their hands in the water for a minute at the approximately 46 centigrade. That was it. After that, they already couldn't keep it there. So I was amazed. I was absolutely amazed how low the shear was. That's exactly what Shlomo Zalman was saying. Till 45, he can tell us not yet. So above that already, he can't give any guarantees. Isn't that amazing? So then I thought, okay, but that's as far as putting your hand in or bathing. What about showering? I thought for shower, I take a shower in my house, I'm sure that the hot water is much hotter than that.
It's less than
they went on the internet and said that it's dangerous if the water gets above 115, and the hotels that put water, which is hard, they try to sue them, and they try to stop them, and the whole story. P.S. the McDonald's case, when the woman sued and got $2 million, it was 170 degrees. It was very hot.
Coffee. 113 degrees.
No one's going to drink it. McDonald's went down now to 150 something because of that lawsuit. So it's not as hot as the people who like it hot. They don't get it. They can't get it. Sorry, they sued us. What can we do? But apparently people like it very, very hot and they blow. That's how people like to consume it. So I started, what about eating food without blowing? So I did a little homework and I said people that eat food as hot as 140 degrees. That's what someone told me. But P.S. they have in the Shiva a shower which is also it's also regulated. It tells you, how many degrees it is. How hot is the water? Some of my boys go take showers by the pool. Guys, take showers by the pool and tell me how hot the water is. I was expecting much hotter for a simple reason. The water rolls off your back. The Gemara speaks in Masech Tehulin about washing your hands with Yatzal lettuce for water. For my Rishonim, for my Machronim, whole discussion, you're not supposed to use it. We're talking about Shagoyim. We're going to burn themselves. The answer is simple. It just rolls off your hands. I thought it was going to be a very, very high number. I was completely mistaken. A bunch of guys took showers. They said they couldn't go over 110. Couldn't. The showers were lower. One of the guys says, he thinks he can get to 120. Whatever it may be. Seems to me, however, that if I can keep my hand on the top of the microwave for a minute, that means it's not even 113 degrees. That's my assumption, that the ceiling of the microwave, while it's in full operation, I don't think it would cool off that instantaneously. I put it right up, within 2 seconds, and I don't know. Maybe it just keeps dissipating. Maybe it was 113 degrees for the 30 seconds that I was making the coffee, and then it keeps, the second I open it starts dissipating, so I can keep my hand on it because...
It's a big opening.
Right, because it keeps dissipating. We cannot conduct a controlled experiment of putting a hand into the microwave while it's going. That's not going to work. Maybe there's a thermometer. Someone has a magnetic thermometer. Maybe Mr. Shabbat, you have one of those things? A magnetic thermometer?
It's plastic.
I know, yeah. So
metal.
Put a piece of tape. Get a non-metallic thermometer. Put it with a piece of tape on top of the... is it possible?
The mercury is metal.
Ah, there's no other way.
The thermometers don't use mercury.
Yeah, they put things in your ears now. There's no mercury in that. There's a way of telling temperature without metal. And someone can do me and find me, figure out a way find out how hot the ceiling is. If the ceiling itself of the microwave is less than the outside, in my opinion, there's no absorption. Because my view is that it has to be the ceiling itself has to be outside the lattice. I know how far microwaves have started, because I remember speaking about this topic in the spring of 1978, spring, summer. That goes back 31 years plus. I remember, I know when it was, I know I was invited to speak at a conference, it was just a new thing. And the other rabbi who spoke with me said he doesn't think so. He thinks that as long as the steam which rises is the outside lattice bulb, even if the top will never reach outside lattice bulb, it's still a problem. And there is, in the literature, evidence that he may be right, but I think I'm right. I think the Aruch HaShulchan says like me, yes. As long as you smell, you should not use it for the opposite car. That's for sure not. That's a recha. Yeah. That's for sure. That could last for 3 hours.
No, it lasts for however many times. It'll last 1 or 2 weeks. The only solution is to clean out the whole thing.
Well, first, when I say use it, excuse me, I mean it's completely clean. I'm not discussing a filthy microwave.
No.
I'm discussing a squeaky, clean microwave.
No.
So the smell, I don't know how to get rid of it. So if you can't get rid of it, just put water in a few times. So it takes it out. Whatever it may be. So for this reason, for these two reasons, microwaves are, in a sense, more lenient than regular ovens from the perspective of kashrus. Let's review the two reasons. One, there's no fire. And two, it's not so hot. You can touch the ceiling. But from another perspective, it's much worse than other ovens. Who wants to guess?
It has no opening.
It may have some opening. Are microwaves vented?
Yeah.
They are vented a little bit, I think. There's another reason why it's much worse. It's a scientific reason. Because you see, microwaves always have steam. Always. Because microwaves, if you take a completely solid, you take a potato, and you put it in a microwave, so you put the potato in a regular oven, there'll be no steam. That's because there's no liquid. Marsh is right, no liquid, there's no steam. But microwaves are a different technology. It takes the whatever water is in the potato, and it moves the molecule. I don't know what it does exactly. There's always steam. Am I right? I think it's always steam in a microwave, no matter what you put in there.
You don't wrap it properly.
Yeah,
it'll be all dried out. You keep it there 8 minutes instead of that 6, depending on the size of the potato,
right.
You'll have a completely dried potato.
Right.
You'll be able to eat it.
Right. So here's what I tell people to do. Because there's so much steam in the microwave, I tell people, why don't you just follow the instruction manual? Who has ever seen an instruction manual of a microwave? Whoever looks at instruction manuals, what does it say there? Besides that, it also tells you to cover all the food.
Right.
Every microwave manager says cover the food. Whether people do it or don't do it, I don't know. They're not saying it for kashrus reasons. They're saying it for cleanliness reasons, to keep the thing functioning. You shouldn't get things. All you have to do is take a simple piece of either paper plate or a paper towel, and you cover the food. It will keep out a vast majority of the steam.
You can even cover it with aluminum foil.
No, you can't.
I just read the manual because I bought one,
yeah.
And it's, as long as it doesn't touch either the top or the bottom, it touches only the cleat, they say that you can use aluminum foil.
I don't want to be sued for malpractice, so I will not recommend.
I'll bring you the manual.
I don't care. I'm afraid that it would suggest aluminum foil. Use a piece of saran wrap, okay? Old-fashioned saran wrap. So therefore, that would keep out almost all the steam. So therefore, I think you have no problem to do that. And that's what I try to do in my house. Now, does everyone follow my lead? I can't. A lot of kids running around the house. I can't guarantee it. But that's what we try to do for a microwave. Before I finish, I see this is much longer time. I just started. In our introduction, we said we're going to talk about the modern kitchen, talk about 10 different things, but we're still only up to microwave. And I want to say one more thing, and then we're going to stop a little bit, the early dismissal. I see it starting to snow hard. And that is as follows. What about Bishul Akum in a microwave? This is very, very serious kashrus question. Very serious. Let's review briefly. Bishul Akum, it means that if a non-Jewish person cooks food and it has two conditions. One, it is Olal Shulchan Melachim, the kind of food which is set for a king's table, which is fit for a king's table, which means, they serve it in the White House. And number two, and I don't mean for breakfast, for a state dinner, that's how I understand it, a state dinner would be the Shulchan Malachim, number one. Number two, You cannot consume it in a raw form. Eino nechal chai. If it's satisfied those two conditions and it's cooked, it is prohibited. If a non-Jew cooked it, for a Jewish person to consume such food, it's a very serious problem. And many nowadays, that people have non-Jewish help in the house, it's a very, very serious problem. It's only been exacerbated by the issue of electronic ignition. Because according to Ashkenazi halacha, if I set the pilot light, based on the Ramah, if I set the pilot light, and then someone is using the pilot to make other fires, and other fires, and other fires, it's of no halacha consequence. It's still called the Jewish fire. So when I was growing up, there was never a problem, because they always had a pilot light, which the Jew would light the pilot light. If a non-Jew would come in, it's okay. Came along Jimmy Carter. We won't say anything about him right now. But one of the things he had, remember the moral equivalency of war, meow, the Rosh Tavis, in the late 70s, we're going to save gas and oil. So he made a gzera, no more pilot lights. Yeah, it's incredible how little is being saved in Bechila by that gzera compared to what other things are being wasted on. But I don't want to go there right now. It's problems on Yontif. Yontif is the problem because it's no longer transfer of fire. It's now creating fire. It's called most the problem on Yontif. You cannot put on your fire your stove on Yontif anymore. But it's also a problem with Bishalak. So one potential solution is microwaves. If you assume that if there's no din of Bishalak, if there's no Aish, then it's mutter. Personally, I believe that's a reliable leniency. And the Vat of Riverdale relies upon it. That we have, for all other methods of cooking, we have to make sure that the Jewish person lights the pilot light or some other way takes care of the problem. But for microwaves, we've accepted a lenient view. Other Vads don't agree. Taking in a microwave is a problem, despite the fact that there's no Aish. Because after all, Bishulakam is very strict, da-da-da-da. And where I came from, based on the simple reading of the Gemara says that only if you're using Aish. Other methods of which might be considered cooking in other areas, Kovush Kimavushal, the Gemara has. If you soak it, it's for a long time, it's considered to be as if it's cooked. Doesn't apply to microwave. It doesn't apply to Bishulakam, because there's no Aish. And if we demonstrated before that microwaves have no Aish, I thought that it should be permissible to use a microwave through a guy, and this can be extremely helpful. Sometimes there are people who have help in the house, and they want to make their own things. They just want to cook up certain things which could not be eaten in a raw state. Now, luckily, most things, water is no problem. Coffee, tea is no problem because the water can be consumed in a raw state. But there could be other kinds of foods. So if you give an opportunity to use a microwave, this can solve a lot of the problems in the homes and even in some of the eateries. So I think it can be lenient with respect to the Bishul Akam as far as the microwaves are concerned. So let's just summarize what we've spoken about today. We start off with a very ambitious topic of covering the modern kitchen, and we rattled off about 10 different manifestations of modern kitchens, things which we defined as being, which were introduced in the last 50 years. And the one we started with is a microwave. And I'm only ending with the microwave because are there other microwave issues that we didn't talk about? I think we've covered microwave pretty extensively. I think spoke about Shabbos, spoke about Kasher, spoke about Bishul Akam. Missing something? I think we've done microwaves pretty well, but we still have many, many other of the suggestions that were spoken of before, and I'll take more during the week of what to talk about. So then, the next Motzei Shabbos, weather permitting, we will have a somewhat more. It's almost 8 o'clock. When I came from, the weather was bad. They let you out 5 minutes early to be able to get home more quickly.
So, when it was snowing, he said he can continue talking all night.
That's true.
That's true.
I was there. He spoke from 7:30 to 12:30. I was there. But then the snow stopped at 12:30. Here's where it's supposed to start. That's why the forecast is not so good. So please get home safely and hope to see you tomorrow in shul, probably by coming on foot. Okay. Jacob, you'll notify the president that we've